Hello, everybody. So the conflict in Gaza is really heating up. Israel's beginning its ground incursions. It's going to be simply pummeling Gaza with rockets, with airstrikes, with artillery and so on. And then the ground invasion to try and seek and destroy the Hamas fighters and to try and rescue the roughly 150 hostages. Most of them Israeli citizens, a few of them citizens of Israel and a second country, a few of them even from Thailand, who were just guest workers in Israel. So this conflict, I would predict, is going to go on for weeks. And then there'll be international pressure building on Egypt. You've got to let them out. And actually, President Sisi's position is a very strong bargaining position, because that's the only way to avoid a humanitarian disaster. People being killed, not just directly from a bombardment, but over 2 million people with no running water, no electricity, no gas, no food being allowed in. Gaza produces very, very little food. And the tacit deal of Israel for a few years was, don't cause trouble and you'll have a half-decent standard of living. If you cause trouble, there'll be hell to pay. And obviously, the Palestinians saying over 1,400 people have been killed already. A lot more are going to die, even without any more bombardments. Some of the wounded in hospital, the drugs are running out, the hospitals can't operate without electricity, and so on. Food was running very low. People were drinking non-potable water or just dying of thirst. So Russia's policy since the end of the Cold War has really been equidistance between Israel and the Palestinians. Remember, Russia, if you go back to the Soviet era, was the main global backer of Palestinian nationalism. Obviously, the Muslim and Arab world likewise. But of the major powers in the world, it was Russia had that, recognized the PLO. Mahmoud Abbas, the president of Palestine, he spent a few years in Moscow in the 1980s. And so, arming and training the PLO, and Moscow's ally in the Middle East was Syria. And of course, Syria was one of the most foremost countries that believed in Arab nationalism. Syria briefly united with Egypt, the United Arab Republic, actually the constitutional title of Egypt to this day, even though it's only Egypt, they're not united with anybody else. But then after the dissolution of the Soviet Union, a lot of Soviet Jews, former Soviet Jews, made Aliyah. They were allowed to emigrate and move to Israel. Now, some of them did it because they cared about their Jewish identity or the Judaic faith. Many of them really just to get out of a collapsing economy in Russia and other economically imploding former Soviet states. So about 20% of Israeli citizens are descended from people who came from the former Soviet Union. But some of them were not halakhically Jewish, were just a quarter or a Jewish or something, sometimes even on the father's side. Because remember, according to Orthodox Judaism, it has to be matrilineal. And some of them, we just weren't brought up in Judaism, it brought up as atheists or even practicing Orthodox Christians and so forth. Or often be a Jewish person married to a Gentile spouse and so on. But anyway, so that Putin even went so far as to call Israel a Russian-speaking country. And the Likud party assiduously courted them in the early 90s, to the extent that Benjamin Netanyahu, his broadcasts were often dubbed in Russian or had Russian subtitles and so on, because they were a crucial element in the electorate. So that's why Russia didn't want to alienate Israel too much. There could be intelligence cooperation. They thought that maybe the Russophone minority, even they actually came from Ukraine or Kazakhstan, another former Soviet republic, would somehow be pro-Moscow. And there was an element of truth to that. But obviously Russia couldn't be too amicable with Israel for fear of alienating Syria and others who believed in Arab nationalism. So President Putin notably has not phoned President Herzog of Israel or the Prime Minister. And Netanyahu had a very cordial relationship with Putin, has visited Moscow several times. And in his autobiography recently, he went so far as to heap praise on Putin. So such paeans you wouldn't find from the leader of really any other democratic country in the world. And Netanyahu has been careful not to offend Russia, you know, often applaud their slaughter of Chechen civilians. They say, you know, you are anti-Muslim, we're anti-Muslim, I think we've got something going here. And all right, there is a Muslim minority in Israel, up to 10% of the population, and they do have legal equality. But just to claim that it's mindless, insensate Muslim violence, that Islam is just inherently barbaric or something like that. But then Ukraine has strongly spoken up for the Israeli position, has unequivocally condemned what Hamas has done, seems to be vocally backing Israel to the hilt. Obviously, the Ukrainians desperately fighting for their own survival, they can't lend a hand to Israel. But that's partly because that is the Occident's attitude, and to really curry favor with the United States. That's why Zelensky is saying that. But then he risks alienating the Arab and Muslim world. So if you're going, but you might say, well, they're kind of completely unhelpful to me anyway. I don't think there's a single Muslim country voted for Ukraine, Ukraine's freedom in the United Nations, mostly neutral. I'm not sure if, well, only probably Eritrea actually backing Russia's aggression. So that's why, Israel was sending humanitarian aid to Ukraine under Yair Lapid and Naftali Bennett, but Netanyahu came in and he ended that. But he might actually go the other way. Now, if he's preoccupied in the short term with absolutely hammering up Gaza, but next year he might think about it. And the United States might say, it should be helpful to you. We sent two aircraft carriers, but no actual airstrikes. Now, why is Biden doing this? To some extent, you know, he's on record as being a hardcore Zionist, very anti-Palestinian for half a century. But the other thing is, it obviously plays well with crucial segments of the electorate in the United States. He doesn't want to be outflanked by the Republican Party. You know, American presidential politics is to some extent a loyalty contest to Israel. So who can be more fervently Zionist? Who can be keener to deny Palestinians their rights? So obstinately opposing a Palestinian being recognized as a nation state that it is. Palestine, which is recognized by almost as many sovereign states as Israel is. Now, every sovereign state is unrecognized to begin with. Even the United States wasn't recognized when it first declared independence. Some Americans didn't even recognize it, remembering up to a third of Americans actually regard themselves as British in 1776 and even fought for King George III against independence. But Netanyahu might sort of come off the fence now saying, well, you got to remember who your friends are. Russia's neutrality, we regard that as hostile. You're either with us or against us, to paraphrase what George W. Bush said after 9/11. And Benjamin Netanyahu has indeed said this is Israel's 9/11. You know, was it 1,300 people killed in a single day? The great majority of them were civilians. So the bloodiest day for Jewry since 1945. So we have to do something. The gloves come off. You know, the world is going to change. We just can't do these things by half measures. I mean, 1,300 people is an awful lot of people, especially bearing in mind Israel's population is only 9 million. But what could they practically do for Ukraine? In the next year, they might send them some military equipment that they don't desperately need themselves. But they've got to see that this conflict doesn't spread. And notably, Fatah, the Palestinian faction ruling the West Bank, hasn't joined in, which will desperately disappoint some Gazans, and said, if we did this together, we might have some sort of a chance. And Hezbollah, that Shia militia in Lebanon. And there's all this stuff about, oh, the Shia and the Sunni, they hate each other's guts. And there are some who are like that, who are vicious and sectarian, but sometimes they cooperate. You know, Hezbollah and Hamas will, and Hamas is Sunni and actually quite anti-Shia. But they, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So that's why Russia is trying to play both sides of the streets, pretending to be friendly with Israel, but speaking friendlily towards Palestinian nationalism and so on. But Netanyahu's government might well fall next year because he's Mr. Security. This was a massive screw up. So 3 days before it happened, there was a warning from the Egyptians there was going to be some sort of attack. But I don't think it was obviously a very strident warning. There's going to be anything like this scale that took everybody by shock. Because there are attacks from time to time, just a few rockets or some militants crossing the security fence or whatever every couple of months. But if they really had any idea how huge this is going to be, I suppose the Egyptians would really emphasize that. And that has been actually intelligence cooperation between the Egyptian regime and Israel for a few years, as President Mohammed Fatah al-Sisi blurted out unwisely in a CNN interview. And he then pleaded with them to delete that. That is actually the best thing in the whole interview. If you say it to a journalist on camera, on the record, of course we're going to broadcast it. That's what an interview is. That's the juiciest bit, which goes down very badly indeed with the Egyptian public, which is mostly anti-Israel. The only reason there's obviously cooperation between Israel and Egypt is because Israel is a military dictatorship, because the average Egyptian wouldn't want this at all. And I've even seen one of these anti-Semitic booklets for sale in an Egyptian bookshop about how it's just racist smile against Jews. But anyway, I wish there were no racism or national hatred and so on. There are no evil nations and there are no good nations, obviously good and bad individuals. So I wish there were peace and an equitable settlement, but I suppose that'd be too much to hope for. You know, justice and freedom for everyone is a magnificent idea, so you can rule it out. So that's yours in cynicism. All right. Thank you for watching the channel. So please donate on PayPal, subscribe on Patreon, an awful lot of things behind the paywall. So on PayPal, I'm georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.